Hank Hanegraaff has answered thousands of questions while hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Now, the Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition offers concise and well-crafted answers to over 170 questions that stumble seekers and galvanize skeptics against the historic Christian faith. This beautiful leather hardbound edition contains all the questions and answers from the Bible Answer Book Volumes 1 and 2, plus all new answers to some of today's tenacious questions such as, does Mormonism really teach that Jesus is the spirit brother of Satan? And did Jesus make a crucial historical blunder in the Gospel of Mark? And that's not all. With each entry, Hank offers scripture references specifically related to the subject matter and recommends resources for further study to better equip you. Get your copy of this attractive 550-page leather hardbound book when you call 888-7000-CRI or order on our secure website at www.equip.org. That's equip.org.
And don't forget to ask about the personalized edition. Set sail for a week at sea with the Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Word. This coming May 9th through May 16th, 2010. The seven-day Western Caribbean cruise departs from Tampa, Florida, and sails to four beautiful Caribbean ports like Grand Cayman, Belize, and Cozumel aboard the luxurious Carnival Legend. Enjoy a time of great fellowship and daily teaching from God's Word with Hank. Grammy Award-winning Christian musician Steve Camp leads worship.
Considering it's Mother's Day, a great time to honor your mom and husbands, to honor your wives. Bring them on a great vacation. Let them relax in the beautiful Caribbean sunshine.
To participate in this event, you must register with our friends at Sovereign Cruises by calling 877-768-2784, extension 101, or by going online at equip.org.
Join us this year for the trip of a lifetime.
Tuned in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with your host, Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. Our radio ministry airs each weekday on stations across the United States and Canada and can also be heard live or recorded at equip.org. Yesterday, Hank was joined by his guest, Dr. Thomas Woodward, author of several books on the topic of intelligent design. Hank and Dr. Woodward started an engaging discussion about evolution versus intelligent design. How should Christians respond to the swirling theories? Dr. Woodward returns to the show today to wrap up the conversation. And now let's go to the studio with your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. It's always great to be in the studio as we answer your questions throughout the United States and Canada. It is a pleasure to have Dr. Thomas Woodward in studio with me as we talk about his book, Darwin Strikes Back, because this is a defense of the science of intelligent design. And one of the things that's intriguing to me in the subtitle of the book is that you call intelligent design a science, whereas it has been caricatured as anything but.
Mm-hmm. And that's on the basis, I think, of the threat, the perceived threat. That is from the mind of those who are defending a nature-only view. In other words, nature is strictly inviolable. It can never be, as it were, affected by anything outside the system. So this idea of naturalism, or we also call it materialism or even physicalism as a kind of a avant-garde word they're using now, whatever you call it, that view basically says if God exists, he only exists as the endpoint of human imaginings. Or if God exists, he's only another name for some phenomenon, like love or self-sacrifice or something like that, which we understand really is a chemical phenomenon, you see. So God is like a subjective reality, no more real than some superstitious myth from some, you know, tribe in a less developed part of the world. So, but the intelligent design movement is squarely in the tradition of good science. And I remember David Raup, one of my friends who is a retired paleontologist, was chair of the paleontology department at the University of Chicago. When I was interacting with him about my first book, Doubts About Darwin, and asked him what he thought of Phil Johnson's work, I literally got from him the scoop.
And for everybody, Phil Johnson is really the father of the ID movement.
Exactly. He's the father that led intelligent design from his post at the University of California at Berkeley, which is not exactly a haven of fundamentalism or conservative thought, at least. But Johnson, Professor Johnson, befriended, or at least sent his materials to Raup. Raup responded by sharing his early materials. I mean, this is the proto kind of exploratory stuff of the intelligent design movement and presenting the case, scientific case, against neo-Darwinism. And Raup took his materials and shared it with his grad students at the University of Chicago. And they read it, and they told Johnson, he told Johnson, my students and I could not find one scientific error in any of your writings. We may not agree with you, but you've critiqued us fairly. You know us well. And he actually helped to set up a meeting in Boston, with about 12 scholars. Stephen Jay Gould, the famous Harvard evolutionist, was there. And so as I was trying to find out in this explosion of a debate that broke out between Johnson and the Darwinist Gould in the middle of this two-and-a-half-day meeting, I talked to David Raup. I mean, I spent probably an hour and a half on the phone with him, and I'm, you know, growing a callus over my ear as I'm taking all these notes. But then I came back to Dr. Raup the next week, and I said, Dr. Raup, can I read back to you what you told me about your attitude toward Johnson? He said, sure. So I read this. You told me that Johnson's work is very good scholarship, and of course, this has been widely denied. He cannot be faulted. He did his homework, and he understands 99% of evolutionary biology. And I remember when I shared that, I said, that's what you told me last week. Would you mind if I included that as a footnote in my dissertation chapter where I'm discussing the outbreak of this debate at the meeting that you attended with Gould and the others? And there was a long pause at the other end of the line, and finally he said, you know, I'll probably be crucified for saying it, but go ahead and put it in. And I was like, I was cheering his courage in saying that, but keep in mind, he had already been retired, I think, 3 or 4 years at that point. So he wasn't having to face his fellow faculty members at the University of Chicago. There was no danger of them turning their backs as he walked into the faculty club or denying, you know, some resources, some money for a research project. That's how much their people are afraid. As you know so well, Hank, the movie Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, brings out this so accurately. And that's why I wanted to cheer Ben Stein and the people who brought that movie out, because they are showing the truth that science can legitimately consider design, but the other side doesn't want to even have the possibility be put on the table. So they'll label it anything but science, but the fact that we're making predictions, we're carrying out experiments like crazy all over the world now. Scientists are doing good, rigorous experiments based on design predictions. And guess what? We have not had one failed design prediction in any of these two dozen experiments. It's a very exciting time.
We are talking to Dr. Thomas Woodward again. His book, Darwin Strikes Back, must reading, available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. Check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org. Is it true to say that 19th century science could find an adequate place for Darwinian evolution, whereas today in the 21st century, neo-Darwinism has huge problems if you want to view it from a scientific standpoint? In 19th century science, you would look at a fertilized human egg and you would say, microscopic blob of jello. Mm-hmm. In the 21st century, we know this is one of the most ordered, complex structures in the entire known universe. So we're dealing with a completely different environment, an environment of scientific enlightenment, which seems to me would make evolutionism quake because it simply doesn't fit the facts.
I couldn't agree more. I you're absolutely, I think, Hank, right on the mark, and it's because of the parallel between the machines that are not just a few of them. They're teams of machines. And the machines are controlled by higher machines. And those machines inside the cells are then looped and backwards and connected to other networks of machines, which are already controlling this whole cybernetic, you know, complex maze of machinery. One of the leading, Bruce Alberts, former president of the, I believe, National Academy of Sciences, he said, what we need for our scientists today to understand is that the cell is no longer a simple area. It's not a simple region or zone. It's incredibly, staggeringly complex because we have this not just analogy of machines. These are literal machines with moving parts. And sometimes there are hundreds of parts in just one machine. And a typical network of machines includes 10 or 50 of these machines working together. Well, Darwin had no notion He couldn't even imagine that a simple blob of Jell-O cell would be much more than a blob of Jell-O, be much more like a computer. But then a computer is extremely low-tech compared to a single-celled bacterium. I think that's why Darwinian theory is, like you say, quaking. It's papered over. According to Michael Denton, an agnostic who's critiqued evolution in his book Evolution, a Theory in Crisis, he says it's the glue of the paradigm. It's a social, you know, kind of like the emperor. Let's say the emperor has clothes. Let's not whisper the possibility the emperor has no clothes. It's like social glue. And if you have this paradigm glue or social glue in which everybody kind of holds hand and just kind of close your eyes, then that's denying, you know, you're just basically refusing to see the enlightenment, as you put it. And so that's why I tell people, you know, be encouraged, because the data is flowing very nicely for our side. And I think the best two books that show that, I mean, I try to give an overview, but the best scientific-focused books are by Michael Behe. Darwin's Black Box, especially the 10th anniversary edition, where he replies to his critics, and then his follow-up book, The Edge of Evolution. If anybody wants to get a crash course on the evidence for a designed cell, I'd say start right there, those two books by Michael Behe.
You are someone that understands the power of story, and the stories that have been communicated with respect to Michael Behe are simply incredible. He has been, in story form, completely dispensed with in the evolutionary community, such that people think that he has been absolutely undressed and demonstrated to be an obscurantist. Exactly the opposite is truth.
I believe that's absolutely correct. Michael Behe is so confident in his theory, and not just he, everyone who reads his stuff and reads the responses from his critics. We've become so confident that we're at the point of laughter. Whenever I see a criticism of Behe, I read it instantly to see if there's anything there, and it's usually a puff of smoke. There's no substance whatsoever.
But it's an effective puff of smoke.
Yeah, and in this case, I would say that what's happening is they are telling a story of a discouraged guy who had an idea and he just kind of gave up. Well, his work is so powerful that even the peer-reviewed literature is naming him and trying to disprove him now. Over the last 6 months to a year, let's say, several key articles have appeared, and they'll refer to Behe and his co-author Snoke of this technical peer-reviewed paper. It's amazing, and now they're trying to say, well, we will prove you wrong. So now he has them where he wants them, I think.
We are talking about one of the most fascinating subjects. This is something that all of us need to be tuned into. With the exception of the Bible, Charles Darwin's The Origin of Species may well be the most influential literary work in the annals of recorded history. Is his paradigm true? Is it false? Today, the ID movement is letting the facts lead wherever they may. We're going to continue talking about intelligent design, the history of intelligent design, where the movement is today, and how we can make a difference while there is yet time. My guest, Thomas Woodward, his book, Darwin Strikes Back. We'll be right back with more of the broadcast.
You've been listening to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Hank is joined in the studio today by his guest, Dr. Thomas Woodward, whose insightful book, Darwin Strikes Back, is available through our e-store. And when you visit us online at equip.org, you'll find a wealth of other resources on the topic of evolution and intelligent design. You may also call our resource consultants at 888-7000-274. Don't touch that dial. We'll return to the show after this short break. When Charles Darwin was writing his famed The Origin of Species, it was well known at the time that the first fossils of animals appeared suddenly and without predecessors. So there was a deep dilemma about what his theory told him to expect to find and the facts. Darwin's Dilemma on DVD explores the mystery of the Cambrian explosion and the scientific controversy that still surrounds it.
Where are the missing transitional forms that Darwin's theory requires? Can any undirected evolutionary process explain the origin of animals? Filmed on four continents, this fascinating documentary examines some of the most important fossil discoveries ever made. The Cambrian explosion was actually an explosion of biological information. Information that points unmistakably to foresight, purpose, and intelligent design. Order Darwin's Dilemma, The Mystery of the Cambrian Fossil Record from CRI by calling 888-7000-274 or online at equip.org. Master the defense of the resurrection in minutes and remember it for a lifetime with the latest release of the Hankrenem series, Resurrection, Memorable Keys to the Greatest Feat in History. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is not merely important to the historic Christian faith. Without it, there would be no Christianity. To make the facts of the resurrection memorable and easily referenced, Hank has developed the Hankrenem Feat and created the second in a series of specifically designed flip charts. Laminated, tabbed, and sized to fit in your pocket, this incredible tool will allow you to defend the truth of the resurrection on a moment's notice. Available for your gift to the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or when you go online to equip.org. Now, more than ever, today's believer who wants to stay informed on today's religious movements and scriptural insights needs to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. Here's what you'll find in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. profoundly changed America with his nonviolent resistance to racial segregation and discrimination, but his philosophy and theology include some dubious beliefs and influences. In this installment of our Philosophers series, we consider how evangelicals should view this complicated African-American leader whose birthday is now marked by a national holiday. In this issue, you'll also find insightful articles on the biblical view of divorce and remarriage. How should Christians handle tithing in the current economic climate? The internet mission field, and all of our regular features that you've come to enjoy.
Call CRI and start your subscription today. 888-7000-CRI. You'll also see it online at equip.org.
Has your spiritual life been strengthened through the radio ministry of the Bible Answer Man broadcast? If so, consider supporting the Christian Research Institute with your most generous gifts. For your donation to the ministry today, Hank would like to send you his newest resource, a color-coded laminated flip chart detailing the facts of Christ's resurrection. And when you contribute financially to the Christian Research Institute, know that your gift supports this radio broadcast. Just call our resource consultants at 888-7000-274. Or, of course, you can donate online at equip.org. That's equip.org. And now we return to the broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff and his special guest, Dr. Thomas Woodward.
Thank you very much, Randy. And we're talking about Dr. Woodward's book, Darwin Strikes Back, Defending the Science of Intelligent Design. Walter Cronkite in Ape Man, The Story of Human Evolution, said, if you go back far enough, we and the chimps share a common ancestor. My father's father's father, his father, going back maybe 500,000 generations, about 5 million years, was an ape. We say that without data demonstrating that physical processes can produce metaphysical realities like sex and spirit, there simply is no warrant for dogmatically declaring that humans evolved from animals. And yet, in the evolutionary paradigm, we are asked to embrace that particular dogma, the idea that humans evolved from animals. And I think at some level, Dr. Woodward, a person looks at an ape and looks at a human being and says, you know, they both have feet, they both have legs, they both have arms, they both have eyes, they both have a nose. It's very logical to assume that one evolved from another. But I think that
so often what we don't see is the difference in the metaphysical reality between an ape and a human being.
I would say that apes and human beings, if you think of the largest categories in the living world, is phyla or phylum, individual, phylum, many phyla. Mankind is not only in a phylum by himself intellectually. He's in a kingdom by himself intellectually. There is such a vast, unbridgeable chasm between humankind and the rest of the animals. Let's just say the mammals alone, that it's hard to express it in simple terms. I think that what we find, if you go back to the early creationist biologists of the 16th, 17th, 18th century, they already recognized that there is a family resemblance between mankind and the old world monkeys, the new world monkeys, and the apes. They grouped them together as primates. That was Carolus Linnaeus, you know, the Linnaean category, already grouped them all together by certain, you know, external, superficial features. The comparison physically is there, that a remote, you know, family member. But family doesn't here, in the Linnaean sense, mean physical family, descended from a great, 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 you know, and repeated 100 times or 100,000 times ancestor. It is the idea of an archetype, that is an idea in the mind of God, the Creator, in which he says, I have a theme, and now I'm going to vary that theme. I mean, it's like Brahms' Fourth Symphony. I love the Fourth Symphony. Third movement is actually my favorite. But in that fourth movement, he has, I think, 8 notes. I won't try to sing it here on your broadcast. But the fourth movement, Brahms' Fourth Symphony, he develops this kind of 8-chord theme, and then he varies it, I think, 30 times. It gets a little bit boring for me. That's why I like the third movement better. But that variation on a theme is the idea. He had a theme of mankind, let's say, and he says, well, okay, now let me vary the theme. And I'll make a lemur, and I'll make a, you know, a bonobo, and then I'll take, you know, all these other variations on the theme. But it's a mental theme, so it's a family concept in the same way we were talking about bridges earlier. I talked about a bridge, a certain design bridge. Well, you can have other bridges, and you can group them in families, but it doesn't mean that a bridge evolved physically and developed offspring that varied, you see. So Darwin's theory, I think, works, again, very well at a micro level if you have chimps that vary and then you branch out a sister species, a bonobo chimp and the regular full-size chimp, and you have the idea of humankind, you know, Adam and Eve, or more recently the eight people on the ark. They gave rise to the races. That's a good example of plausible microevolution, but that's, again, light years away from us evolving materialistically from chimps.
We're talking to Dr. Thomas Woodward. Again, his book, Darwin Strikes Back, you can check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org. Let's take some calls before we go to break. Matt, listening on Bot Radio in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, guys. How are you this evening?
Doing good.
Great.
Thanks for taking my call. I'll try to boil this down. Dr. Woodward, I'd seen recently a program on NOVA about evolution and DNA and, you know, how we got from that supposed ape-like ancestor to where we are today. And they had interviewed a physician that was versed in genetics and was studying, I believe it was muscular dystrophy. And he had found, he was looking through the gene, or through the genome, and he found, you know, a gene that was supposed to code for the building of muscles, and he found what he thought was a problem in the human version of it. And he said, well, this would be a big problem for the development of a muscle. And he went and compared that to the chimp genome and discovered that that gene and the corresponding gene in the chimp genome was intact. And his hypothesis is, and it turns out that the gene coded for the same muscle on the jaw as it does in chimps and humans. And his hypothesis was that the corruption in the gene corresponding to humans allowed for a smaller jaw muscle, which in turn allowed for extended cranial capacity, and may have heeded the human evolution, the kind of a one small step in the evolution for mankind, if you will. And I was kind of wondering what your take on that hypothesis is.
Well, I think it's an extremely weak hypothesis because it certainly does avert your gaze from the most important of the redesign projects in producing a human from a chimp, and that is rewiring and vastly increasing the capacities of our brain. Now, let's just assume for a moment, okay, a corruption of some kind of either bone or muscle or whatever growth gene, a gene gets switched off so that the jaw size changes. What happens when you change an external feature is if you're trying to redesign the animal holistically, that is, I mean, you don't have one thing to change. I mean, I won't even go into the area of sexual reproduction and some of the other interesting details that in comparing chimps with humans. You have dozens of changes that have to be tightly coordinated. And also, the most important thing is you're not just increasing DNA, you're rewriting the epigenome. That's the layers upon layers of information that sit on top of the genes, literally outside the genome. You have the epigenome, the methyl tags, and the bells and whistles, the phosphor, and other tags added to the little spools of DNA. So you have to redesign five or six different levels of information simultaneously when we don't, on a naturalistic basis, we don't have any evidence leading us to the conclusion that you can even tweak a single protein. And that's where I would encourage you to read any article you can find by Doug Axe. Doug Axe is the leading biochemist at the forefront of the intelligent design movement. He works at the Biologic Institute. And he's showing that you would just to tweak one wrinkle on one side of a protein, you'd have to have at least a dozen to two dozen coordinated mutations simultaneously or in tight concert with each other. We can't even get three mutations to happen simultaneously in a coordinated concert. So with that kind of information, we're literally out of gas before we even tweak a single protein, when you'd have to probably tweak hundreds, if not thousands, of proteins. That's why I think Darwinian theory cannot survive, as Hank puts it, the enlightenment of the modern biological revolution. But it's a great question. Thank you for asking me.
We're talking to Thomas Woodward, and Philip Johnson said of his book, Darwin Strikes Back, that this tells the thrilling story of how the Darwinian establishment has summoned all its power to crush the frightening challenge of the intelligent design movement, and how the rebels are not only surviving but gaining new strength as they respond to the onslaught. The evolutionary community simply cannot handle the sterling arguments made by the intelligent design movement. Again, these arguments displayed in stunning fashion in Darwin Strikes Back, a book available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. You can check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org. When you write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, or when you talk to our resource consultants at 888-7000-CRI. For those of you leaving us now, you can catch the rest of the broadcast on XM170, or you can just listen to it on the World Wide Web at equip.org. For everybody else, we're going to be right back with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. And do remember, this broadcast is not an accident. It is the result of people who love the truth, standing with us prayerfully and financially. If you can support the ministry, this would be a great time to do it. You can do so on the World Wide Web at equip.org in a safe, secure fashion. We'll be right back.
In this edition of the Bible Answer Man, Hank is joined by his special guest, Dr. Thomas Woodward. We're talking about a powerful debate that is rocking scientific and religious circles. Is evolution true, or is God the designer of all life? Is there a case for the biblical account of creation in Genesis? And what is intelligent design? Amidst the swirling arguments, how should believers respond? For more information on these engaging topics, go to our website at equip.org, where you'll find a vast array of resources in our e-store and in our research database. Now don't touch that dial. We'll be right back with more of the show. Set sail for a week at sea with the Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Word, this coming May 9th through May 16th, 2010. The 7-day Western Caribbean cruise departs from Tampa, Florida, and sails to four beautiful Caribbean ports like Grand Cayman, Belize, and Cozumel aboard the luxurious Carnival Legend. Enjoy a time of great fellowship and daily teaching from God's Word with Hank. Grammy Award-winning Christian musician Steve Camp leads worship. The topic throughout our week will be the Word, as we explore the unfathomable riches of the God-breathed Scriptures and how we can apply these great truths to our lives. To participate in this event, you must register with our friends at Sovereign Cruises by calling 877-768-2784, extension 101, or by going online to our website, www.equip.org. Register soon, as cabins are limited.
We have assembled for the first time ever some of the great luminaries of the evidence for Christ in the world. These people have been assembled for one purpose, and that is to present the case for Christ to you. And in the end, it's your responsibility, your opportunity to come to your own conclusion in the case for Christ.
Based on Lee Strobel's best-selling book, The Case for Christ is now on DVD. One skeptical journalist:
I thought the idea of an all-powerful creator of the universe was just an absurd idea.
Investigates the most important story in history. Lee Strobel and biblical scholars explore the evidence for the life of Jesus.
Now, it would require more faith for me to maintain my atheism than to become a follower of Jesus Christ. Investigate the evidence for yourself.
The Case for Christ. Look for it on DVD.
Order this DVD and the entire Lee Strobel 3-disc film collection by calling 888-7000-274 or online at equip.org. You're listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Today, Hank is joined by his guest, scholar Dr. Thomas Woodward. 2009 was a landmark year for Charles Darwin. Fans of his theory of evolution celebrated his bicentennial. On the other hand, there has been a steady unraveling of Darwin's theory of macroevolution. How should educated Christians respond? Well, let's go back now to the conversation between Hank and Dr. Woodward.
And you might be asking the question, does evolution really matter? Well, evolution is much more than a theory about man's origins. It is a comprehensive worldview that determines how you live your life. The far-reaching consequences of evolution are felt in virtually every aspect of society, from the loftiest government office to the lowliest kindergarten classroom. So we're talking about an issue that impacts your life, and I'm talking about this issue with Thomas Woodward. He is the premier historian of the intelligent design movement, and I want to ask you a pertinent question, and that is, when we talk about intelligent design, we talk about evolution, we talk about academia, are we talking ultimately just about the whole issue of intellectual freedom to start with?
I would say intellectual freedom, the right to speak openly on these issues is front and center, squarely before us. I think that in high schools, this issue is extremely important, because in most states, not all, but in most, let's say about 45 of the states, the teacher's right to present materials, I'm talking about scientific data, scientific articles that question the current theory, that right is not protected. In other words, the teacher can be, let's say, fired, demoted, dismissed, reassigned, basically treated as if they had done something terrible, culturally or educationally improper, you know, breach of conduct. So the idea of presenting evidence, even without bringing in intelligent design, the idea of presenting evidence that questions the Darwinian accepted orthodoxy, that right, unfortunately, in most states is not protected. There's a few places where it is. I think in Louisiana probably has the best law on the books right now, where teachers are actually told that you have every right and encouragement to present both sides of any scientific issue, including macroevolution. And then they say this is not construed as bringing in the right to bring in any religious information or religious point of view. I think that's probably the best law on the books, and I think other states hopefully will wake up and move in the direction, the enlightened direction that Louisiana has gone in.
We're talking to Dr. Thomas Woodward, his book, Darwin Strikes Back, Defending the Science of Intelligent Design. One of the things that I want to get into for just a moment is your story, because you were not always someone who would have followed the path of intelligent design. You had already made up your mind, I don't want to be confused with the facts.
Very much so. When I was in high school, I was attending a Protestant church. I'll not name the name, because they're Episcopalian. And so the idea of an intelligent designer, well, I mean, maybe out there remotely God existed up kind of above and beyond the universe, but certainly evolution, macroevolution, was rock solid scientific fact to me. So when I went off, I was accepted at Yale and Princeton, and my dad and three older brothers had gone to Princeton, so I opted for that institution. So I've dropped religion like a hot potato, encountered some Christian students on the campus who were having a Bible study. Well, that didn't bother me. I was kind of fascinated. I'd never read the Bible, even though I attended church all my life. So I was listening to them, and I said, well, you know, you're studying Genesis? And they said, well, actually, we're taking time out. We're studying scientific evidence that goes against evolution. Well, they said the wrong thing to the wrong person, because I was practically Billy Graham for evolution at that point. So I stood up for evolution. I said, what ridiculous point is this? You know, that's absurd. You know, there's no evidence against evolution. I said, who's teaching this? They said, he's an alumnus of the university. I said, who is this? Just somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about? Well, he's graduate class of 13. I said, there's your problem. You know, he doesn't know 20th century science. So he was 78 at the time. This was like 1969. I was a freshman, 68 actually. And so I was. I said, I need to meet this yo-yo and bring him into the 20th century. So I literally attended a Bible conference. They had a guest speaker a month later, early December, and I met Dr. Fullerton. And basically, after the talk, I was introduced to him, and we engaged a discussion. I'll kind of skip some of the details, but he did bring up fairly quickly the issue of man's alienation from God. And he got my attention when he talked about the wages of sin is death. And I'll never forget his comparison of a tulip or a flower. If you cut the tulip at its stem, the flower very quickly shrivels. It's been cut off from source of life. And that image just stuck in my mind, and I thought, well, I still need to deliver my lecture on you know, Darwinism, natural selection, mutations, whatnot. So I went back to his apartment, and he was hitting me with quotes from Isaiah 53, you know, the suffering servant dying in place of our sins and rising again from the New Testament. I was hitting him with fossils and mutation and whatnot. So after 2 days, literally two sessions over 2 days, I finally prayed a prayer to get him off my back. Came back and after Christmas, and I said, basically, when he called me up for follow-up, I'm sorry. I said, I really don't want to see you anymore. And he said, I'll be praying. Well, watch out when Dr. Fullerton prays for anybody on the Princeton campus. Of course, he's with the Lord now. But he prayed, and then pretty soon, angst, the German, you know, existentialist term, anxiety about your own demise or your own ultimate destiny, hit me big time. I mean, I thought, you know, is there any life after death? And finally, after just battling with this, I heard about a younger guy, a Princeton graduate, who'd come to your room and lead a one-on-one Bible study. I said, that's for me. And I heard he was really low-key, and I said, that's for me. So he started coming, and probably every week from, let's say, February through the first week of May, final exam week, I met with Bill Fay. He's a retired businessman now in Pennsylvania. So he met with me and basically laid the facts out. Low-key, you know, pop open a can of Coke and talk. So that was in May, and he explained the gospel one more time. I said, do I have to do this in front of you, you know, make my commitment, my decision? He said, no, you can go back to your room privately and just let us know about it if you make that commitment. I said, thanks for not pressuring me. I looked at him. I said, I think I'm going to do this sooner or later. Might as well get it over with now. And so I then prayed a very sincere prayer, putting trust and faith in Christ who died for me and rose again. And that in that moment, I remember knowing for the first time that if I died, I go instantly to heaven, not because of any good thing I'd done, but because of what Christ had done on the cross for me and had risen triumphantly, and he was alive, and I knew it at that point. So that was my turning point. I was still a Darwinist, so much so that when I was walking back to my dorm room in Witherspoon Hall on the Princeton campus, I remember my first prayer as a new believer, like 10 minutes old in the Lord. I said, Lord, I pray I won't have to get involved with this Princeton Evangelical Fellowship because they're all a bunch of creationists, Lord, and you know I'm an evolutionist. And I can imagine God looking down saying, permission denied. And so at that point, I was still in turbulence, but I still had, I was open now for dinner. I had dinner with Dr. Fullerton, and that issue kind of receded to the background. And within about 6 months to a year, as I was a new person in Christ, I suddenly was able to look at the evidence as a Christian now in a new light. And I realized, wow, the evidence, especially in the fossil record, was just overwhelming. I had never once heard that there was any evidence in the fossil record that pointed toward design, that it pointed toward this, you know, the separateness of creations, unconnected by even the hint of a chain of intermediates. I had never heard that. And so as I was considering, you know, this new message, you know, that not only the Christian message, which I embraced, the message of scientific support for the creation concept, I thought, this is really cool. And the same guy who had written one of the key books, Genesis Flood, that early book by Henry Morse and John Whitcomb, Whitcomb had come to faith through the same gentleman, Dr. Fullerton, on the Princeton campus in 1945, I think it was. And so he was flying out from Indiana from his seminary post to teach us this key evidence, scientific as well as biblical, of course, but evidence on creation. And so you can imagine me as a new kid on the block, just eating this up, just inhaling it. And then, of course, I owe so much to the leadership of the intelligent design movement, because so many of them have mentored me and enabled me literally to write this book, because I was the fly on the wall at so many of the early meetings when Phil Johnson and Charlie Thaxton and these other guys were meeting and hammering out the basic ideas of intelligent design. It was thrilling.
What's so interesting about that testimony is that as a result of receiving Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior of your life, you in essence were empowered to be involved in open-minded science. So
exactly.
You didn't start with the presupposition that philosophical naturalism is all there is. Your mind was opened up so you could consider both natural and supernatural evidences for the issue of origins.
Right, because if God exists, and of course I'm utterly convinced that he does, then he's the ruler of the universe. And so my reasoning, and I think it's valid reasoning to a certain extent, is that God could have maybe, you know, at least as a theory, put in you know, knit into the fabric of nature these processes through which, as kind of like delegated creators, they bring about his creation will. But of course, we realize that there's no delegated thing in nature that can code, that can produce computer code. So that's by the time, at the end of my freshman year, sophomore year, I was convinced that creation was true.
Talking to Dr. Thomas Woodward, his book, Darwin Strikes Back, Defending the Science of Intelligent Design, the book available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. You can order online at equip.org. When you write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And as always, when you talk to our resource consultants at 888-7000-CRI, a quick reminder that this is a ministry supported by listeners just like you. Join the team. Without you, we're not going to win the game. We need you on board. If you can stand with me prayerfully and financially, I want to send you my new flip chart, Memorable Keys to the Greatest Feat in History. Of course, we're talking about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Be right back.
In this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, Hank is joined by his special guest, Dr. Thomas Woodward. We're talking about a powerful debate that is rocking both scientific and religious circles alike. Is evolution true, or is there an intelligent and purposeful designer of the universe? Is there a case for the biblical account of creation in Genesis? And what is intelligent design? As arguments are flying on both sides of the debate, how should believers respond? To find out more information on these engaging topics, go to our website at equip.org or call our resource consultants at 888-7000-CRI. Now don't touch that dial. We'll be back with more of the show in just a moment. Don't be caught off guard by deception. Know what you believe about Jesus Christ and why. President of the Christian Research Institute and host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, Hank Hanegraaff, wants to equip believers with the truth so that when confronted with a lie, it is recognized immediately. A book by Timothy Paul Jones will help you understand and refute popular conspiracy theories permeating our postmodern culture. The good news is that these theories are not new and are few in number. Jones precisely demonstrates how each theory falls short of their overblown claims. Order Conspiracies and the Cross today from CRI. And when you order, know that you're also supporting the ministry of the Christian Research Institute. You can order today online at equip.org or by calling one of our resource consultants at 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Order your copy and you'll learn to accurately defend the gospel accounts of Jesus Christ.
The resurrection is not merely important to the Christian faith. Without it, there would be no Christianity.
Human history was changed forever by what happened on that third day. The Third Day by Hank Hanegraaff defends the resurrection of Jesus Christ in meticulous detail. It contains authentic evidence and factual proof for the resurrection, from Christ's torment on the cross to the empty tomb to his appearances and transformation. If you need tangible proof that the Christian faith is based on evidence and not mere emotion, this resource will be an immense help to you.
Belief in the resurrection is not a blind leap into the dark, but faith founded on fact.
The Third Day by Hank Hanegraaff, available in hardbound or CD. Call 888-7000-CRI to order. 888-7000-CRI. Find out more by going to our website at www.equip.org. When Charles Darwin was writing his famed The Origin of Species, it was well known at the time that the first fossils of animals appeared suddenly and without predecessors. So there was a deep dilemma about what his theory told him to expect to find and the facts. Darwin's Dilemma on DVD explores the mystery of the Cambrian explosion and the scientific controversy that still surrounds it. Where are the missing transitional forms that Darwin's theory requires? Can any undirected evolutionary process explain the origin of animals? Filmed on four continents, this fascinating documentary examines some of the most important fossil discoveries ever made. The Cambrian explosion was actually an explosion of biological information, information that points unmistakably to foresight, purpose, and intelligent design. Order Darwin's Dilemma, The Mystery of the Cambrian Fossil Record from CRI by calling 888-7000-274 or online at equip.org. This is a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Hank is joined in the studio today by his guest, Dr. Thomas Woodward, whose insightful book, Darwin Strikes Back, is available through our e-store. And when you visit us online at equip.org, you'll find a wealth of other resources on the topic of evolution and intelligent design. You may also call our resource consultants at 888-7000-274. Now, let's get back to the conversation with Hank Hanegraaff and Dr. Thomas Woodward.
And Dr. Thomas Woodward is working hard towards intellectual freedom. He is a premier historian for the intelligent design movement. And one of the things I want you to tell our listeners is just how important the battle is and how you have found some unexpected allies in the fight.
It's really shocking how many, and very encouraging, I should say also, to see how many people who you would not expect to come to our side to speak out in favor of, or at least speak out where they're impressed with our ideas. They've just been popping up right and left. Let me just mention a few. Brad Monton rhymes with wonton soup, if you want to remember that. I had to ask him, you know, say, how do I pronounce this? He's a professor at University of Colorado out in Boulder, Colorado, tenured, thankfully, so they can't fire him for his controversial new book, Seeking God in Science. Just came out a few months ago. And Brad Monton came to my attention because people were talking about, here he is, an atheist. Matter of fact, the subtitle, Seeking God in Science, is the subtitle, An Atheist Defends Intelligent Design. And his point is that as a philosopher specializing in physics and physics formulas and physics ideas, studying, he got his PhD at Princeton just a few years ago under the leading philosophers of physics in the world today. I mean, this is where Einstein taught. So Brad Monton was so appalled at the sleazy, low-quality attacks on intelligent design, where, in fact, the more he read our stuff, the more he read Dembski or you know, Guillermo Gonzalez, you know, the Privileged Planet book, the more he read all of our stuff, especially in physics and cosmology, but biology too, the more impressed he was. Well, it didn't convince him instantly to convert to theism or search for the true God. But he said, one thing I know good arguments when I see them, and here are some pretty good arguments. Let me tell you why I like these, even though I'm not persuaded yet. And so that's an example. Another example, Thomas Nagel, N-A-G-E-L. If you go to our website, we actually have an article summarizing.
And your website is?
Yeah, thank you. Apologetics.org. If anybody needs to get in touch with me, information, just write information, write out the whole word at apologetics.org. But on our homepage, scroll down a few inches, you'll see an article
written by a skeptical attorney, I might add. Edward Sisson wrote the article. We were given permission to post it. But on the article, Thomas Nagel, of all people, a very, very towering figure in the world of philosophy, especially the philosophy of cognition, you know, how do brains work, how does consciousness work. Thomas Nagel, an outspoken atheist, has read now Behe's works, both the first and the second book, Darwin's Black Box and Edge of Evolution, and he says in this article, I think intelligent design is a legitimate scientific theory. Secondly, I've had doubts about it my whole life. Thirdly, I think this would make a stimulating discussion in any science classroom, potentially, if it passes, you know, muster with a court, you know, and how it's done. And fourthly, he says, Behe's work is brilliant, and it's good science, and I've read it myself. So there. And it was Nagel, then, that endorsed Steve Meyer's book in the Times Literary Supplement as one of the top 100 books for the year 2009. I was so thrilled, Hank, with your interview with Steve Meyer. Brilliant interview. I loved it. And so Nagel has emerged, and the more he's pounded, you know, there's kind of a tirade against him. You know, so the atheist blogs are gnashing their teeth. But that's now turning him almost a little bit more radical in favor of us, because he sees, again, just panic on the other side. You know, and we could talk about, Colin Patterson remained an agnostic. We played the quote the other day in our broadcast, in this famous lecture he gave at the American Museum of Natural History in November 81, his famous question, and we heard it here on this program, can anyone tell me any one thing about evolution is true, any one thing at all? And I explained how even Colin Patterson, who never embraced creation or intelligent design, remained a dogged critic of Darwinian theory to the last day of his life. He died in the late 90s. And little known is that when Phil Johnson and I were interacting, he says, oh, by the way, Phil Johnson said, my book Darwin on Trial was first presented to and checked out by Colin Patterson. Johnson even went to the British Museum, struck up a friendship. They went out and tipped a few at a local pub, and Johnson shared his personal journey to the Messiah. And so actually gave a little bit of a personal testimony there. But Colin Patterson remained to the end of his life asking that same question. Can anyone tell me any one thing about evolution that's true? Any one thing at all? He never retracted the question. He asked it the rest of his life. Never got a good answer, by the way.
Let me ask you about the end game of intelligent design. Is the end game open-minded science?
That's a great way to put it. Open-minded science, which does not defer to what's called methodological naturalism. Now, that's a mouthful. What that means is, I mean, pure naturalism says, okay, there is no God, somehow I know it, and therefore it's all over, you know, don't even think of it. Methodological naturalism pretends to be a little bit more coy or humble. Say, well, God may exist, but when we walk into the science lab, let's pretend he doesn't exist. Let's act as if he doesn't exist. So in our methodological reasoning and our tools, our experiments, we will not even put on the table the possibility of intelligent action or even detecting intelligence. And that's the whole heart of ID theory. Intelligent design theory says, using careful mathematical reasoning and careful empirical testing, you can definitively catch intelligence in the act of presenting itself, just by looking at the data. We've tested this out over and over. You know Bill Dembski, of course. You've had him on your program. And so the idea of detecting intelligence, I think, makes intelligent design a real strong case for a new view, an open-minded view, as you put it, Hank, where science is the search for truth, with a capital T, wherever it leads you. And if that truth raises other bigger questions about the source of this intelligent programming, this clearly intelligent engineering that we find in this city of machines, a single-celled animal, a bacteria, is a wonder of technology which has the ability to duplicate itself. That's like all of New York City duplicating itself into two identical New York cities, complete with every machine, every computer, every thumbtacker, and every bagel salesperson, you know, on the streets, all duplicated in about, you know, 6 hours. Well, it takes a lot of intelligence to create a machine which contains thousands of machines and can duplicate itself that quickly into duplicates of itself without any guidance from the outside. To set that kind of system up, you got to have tons, I mean literally almost infinite tons of intelligence. To think that no intelligence brought about such a high-tech city as an E. coli bacteria, that's just, you know, beyond, I can't manage the leap of belief to believe that. And E. coli only has a genome of about 4 million letters. You jump to human genomes, you're multiplying that by 1,000.
As we close the broadcast today, is it fair to comment for just a moment on the false dichotomy between religion and science and say that this is indeed a false dichotomy, that science and religion are interlocking, overlapping domains?
I think that they are overlapping domains. They feed on each other in a proper sense. In other words, they're mutually supportive. Steve Meyer brought this out, and I endorse his viewpoint heartily, is that because of, you know, the positing of design theory, okay, in the science realm, okay, that, of course, supports the notion that there is a religious base. But without the religious base, that there is an intelligence, you see, that would underwrite their scientific project, then you would never have any confidence that the universe is intelligible. So the arrows go both ways. You know, it wasn't just an accident that science was born in the womb of robust Christian faith. It's logical, because science basically is the enterprise to find the truth up there at the higher level where God thinks. And the early scientists had that energetic motivation. They were fired up to, as it were, to penetrate to this brilliant mind they saw above them, not only in Scripture, but, you know, portrayed everywhere in nature. So I think that I would use the phrase that Steve Meyer taught me, and that is the mutual support, the mutual integration, feeding each other, encouraging each other to higher and higher realms of discovery.
Dr. Thomas Woodward, thank you for participating in this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. You are, of course, making a big difference at Trinity College of Florida.
Can I give our website?
Absolutely.
TrinityCollege.edu, if anybody's interested in attending one of the finest Bible colleges in the United States, if I can put a plug.
And you're also the director of the C.S. Lewis Society.
And that's apologetics.org, and they can just send a message, information, spell out the whole word, at apologetics.org, and we'd see if we can maybe go out and do some talks here and there in churches or campuses.
And for today's broadcast, you're also the author of Darwin Strikes Back, Defending the Science of Intelligent Design, the book available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. You can check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org. And as always, talk to our resource consultants at 888-7000-CRI. Do remember the Battle for the Bible, the 2010 CRI National Conference. Check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org. All of that taking place May 7th through May 8th in Tampa Bay, Florida. If you can support us prayerfully and financially, it'd be deeply appreciated. You can do that on the World Wide Web at equip.org. Look forward to seeing you on the next edition of the broadcast.
We'd like to thank Dr. Woodward for joining us on the Bible Answer Man broadcast and hope you've enjoyed this special edition. If you want to learn more about intelligent design or to order any of our resources on the subject, go to equip.org. Using our search site, you'll find a vast collection of articles, and in our e-store, you can order Dr. Woodward's insightful book. Place your order today by going to our website at equip.org. That's equip.org. Or just place a phone call to one of our resource consultants toll-free at 888-7000-274. If you'd like to make a donation to support this ministry, any amount would be appreciated. And when you do so, you'll know that you're making an eternal impact. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is a production of the Christian Research Institute. Master the defense of the resurrection in minutes and remember it for a lifetime with the latest release of the Hankrenem series, Resurrection, Memorable Keys to the Greatest Feat in History. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is not merely important to the historic Christian faith. Without it, there would be no Christianity. To make the facts of the resurrection memorable and easily referenced, Hank has developed the Hankrenem Feat and created the second in a series of specifically designed flip charts. Laminated, tabbed, and sized to fit in your pocket, this incredible tool will allow you to defend the truth of the resurrection on a moment's notice. Available for your gift to the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or when you go online to equip.org.
For centuries, two questions have challenged the Christian faith.
In a world with thousands of religions and gods, why is Jesus the only way to salvation? How could a loving God, the God of the Bible, create a world filled with evil and suffering?
Based on Lee Strobel's best-selling book, The Case for Faith examines two of the biggest objections to Christianity: emotional barriers to faith that have challenged believers and skeptics alike. The Case for Faith DVD also includes more than an hour of specially produced bonus features that will help you face the toughest questions about God and the Christian life.
Order The Case for Faith, The Case for Christ, and The Case for a Creator DVDs in the Lee Strobel 3-disc collection by calling 888-7000-274 or online at equip.org. That's equip.org.